happen, we have to really escalate the noise we make so that we'll be heard.
Welcome to Gay USA. I'm Andy Hum.
And I'm Maren Johns. Hello, Andy. How are you feeling?
Well, folks, since I did the show, right the day after I did the show last week, I tested positive for COVID for the first time, despite all my precautions, my 7 vaccines, all that stuff. And it's been a pretty rough week. And you can probably hear it in my voice, but I've regained most of my strength. And so I'm just glad to be alive and I'll be able to do the show with you, Maren.
Oh, I'll do my best. But that was a pretty terrible birthday present for you from the universe.
It was. It's a good thing I didn't have a big celebration planned. But anyway, let's get to the news. We have a lot of bad news, but we're going to start. Maren's going to tell us about Dr. Jill Biden and her speech to PFLAG.
Yep. And you would have just heard the breaking news. Republicans elect Mike Johnson, deep red, far right, anti-LGBTQ, Christian nationalist as House Speaker of the House.
Just awful. California's new out lesbian U.S. Senator will not run for the seat in 2024.
I'm sad about that. But good news, federal judge in Montana has continued to block the state's anti-drag law.
And the author of Florida's Don't Say Gay Law is going to prison.
Karma.
If only he were going to prison for that.
Exactly. That would be justice. Two different things. State College LGBTQ resource centers are being shut down under new anti-LGBTQ laws.
They're erasing us. But not out swimming great Diana Nyad, who has transitioned to support for trans women athletes.
Orlando has purchased the site of the tragic 2016 Pulse massacre, and we'll talk about what they might do with it.
We have the deaths of 5 trans and non-binary people to report as that violence continues.
And we have lost 2 pioneering lesbian activists and intellectuals, Amber Hollibaugh and Eve Kolish, both died.
What stories they had. The Pope met with an advocacy group for LGBTQ Catholics and its founder, who was once silenced by his predecessor.
And as dysfunctional as House Republicans have been, their appropriations bill slashed federal funding for HIV/AIDS programs.
And Christian Cooper's memoir was nominated for a prestigious award for nonfiction. But Maren, start us out with some good news. What happened at PFLAG?
Well, over the weekend on Sunday, the PFLAG National Convention, Learning with Love, it wrapped up after 4 days of incredible plenary sessions, panels, speeches. It was at the DoubleTree Hotel by Hilton in DC. But I think everyone would agree the highlight was the event being opened on Friday with remarks by First Lady Jill Biden. She said some terrific things. I'll just quote some of the highlights of what she said. At its core, PFLAG is about family, and family is love. The First Lady told an audience of 430 international and domestic allies and members of PFLAG, people who come from all around the world, really remote places to come to DC to hear this fabulous discussion, China, Costa Rica, Vietnam, Panama. And Dr. Biden continued, I am here today to applaud our 50 years of service and advocacy and to ask you to keep going, continue to summon Jean Manford's courage because the world needs those small acts of love now more than ever. And, of course, Manford is PFLAG's co-founder, a school teacher, and an activist who passed in 2013. Dr. Biden also said, there's no more fundamental fight than the fight to be our authentic selves and love who we love. PFLAG is living proof that a small group of thoughtful, committed citizens can change the world. And look at that small group now. So, yeah, congratulations, PFLAG, and all who attended, including Admiral Rachel Levine.
Yeah, PFLAG, a terrific group. And so that's the good news. The bad news, folks, is that the House Republicans have just elected, unanimously, but for them, a far-right Christian nationalist, Mike Johnson from Louisiana, a relatively new congressman, as the Speaker of the House of Representatives. This guy, if you see him on TV, he's very smooth. He used to be a national spokesperson for Alliance Defending Freedom. That's the far-right group that dedicates itself totally to wiping out gay rights laws. And back in 2013, we have a clipping that somebody sent us, opposing Shreveport, where he's from, passing a lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender rights law. And some of the things that Mike Johnson wrote in there: is there a crisis of discrimination against transgender people? This is pure political correctness. Of course, through the work of the Alliance Defending Freedom, there is a crisis of discrimination against transgender people nationwide now. Of course, you know, in his column, he said, what will be next? Protecting adultery? Of course, that's what he does. He was one of the defenders of Donald Trump in his impeachment trial, and he totally is an acolyte of Trump's. He called homosexual behavior destructive to individuals, to families, and to society at large, and that it's a bizarre choice. No successful civilization prior to the 21st century has ever provided legal preferences for same-sex relationships. I mean, he goes on and on and on, and that's just on gay stuff. Wants a national ban on abortion and birth control and a ban on marriage equality. He opposes health care for veterans exposed to toxins. He's opposed to the Violence Against Women Act, and he's a total tool of the oil and gas industry. Now, this is your Speaker of the House now.
Yeah. I mean, I feel slightly vindicated.
In line to the presidency right after Kamala Harris.
Right. Should we talk about Antonin Scalia's?
But I do just want to say, out Representative Angie Craig, the Democrat of Minnesota, wished her wife a happy anniversary as she voted for Hakeem Jeffries during that vote to make a point to Speaker Johnson. And the other thing is, the other previous one that the Republicans nominated for Speaker was this guy, Tom Emmer of Minnesota. And he immediately ran into problems because even though he's a very conservative Republican, he voted in favor of the Respect for Marriage Act last year. And that made him unacceptable. There were 26 members who voted against him in the conference. He also voted to certify the 2020 election, which, of course, Mike Johnson did not. God forbid what's going to happen in the next election. Anyway, let's talk about Charlottesville.
Yeah, Antonin Scalia's daughter wants a Virginia school board seat. It's one of the hottest and most expensive school board races in the country, in Virginia, in the Albemarle County, home of Charlottesville.
Where I went to college, University of Virginia.
Oh, wow. Well, we've got a bit of a race here, pitting the conservative daughter of Scalia, Meg Scalia Bryce, whose children are in private schools, against her leading adversary would be Allison Spillman, who is a progressive mother of five public school kids, one trans daughter, and a neurodivergent son included in that mix. But Bryce is a bit of a problem, as we can see shaping up, because she does not believe in the existence of systemic racism. She favors vouchers, and she challenges the country's supportive curriculum for our community.
Well, give her some credit. She said she doesn't believe in systemic racism in a forum by the NAACP.
In her opening remarks, I believe she said that. It's pretty incredible, isn't it? She said that she acknowledges that racism exists.
Oh, thank you.
She acknowledges that it exists, that some people are racist, but she doesn't believe that it is embedded in the system. She doesn't agree that there's systemic racism. And she says, quote, "I don't think somebody should be shamed into silence for expressing that."
And a lot of right-wing money was pouring in for her. And so then some smaller donations were raised to help Allison Spillman, the Democrat in the race. Kudos to anybody on our side who steps up and runs for school board. It's a thankless task. It's not paid. But people need to do it to stop people like Ms. Scalia Bryce. And of course, this is all part of Governor Glenn Youngkin's plan, another fascism with a smiling face governor, who is using these kinds of issues to try to, you know, take over the country.
I noticed she's dropped her the Scalia part of her name while she's out there stumping, because she says she thinks it'll go against her. Not so much that people, you know, will be terrified that she's the daughter of that person. I think she's more worried that, you know, she's privileged. Yeah. So,
all right. So Governor Gavin Newsom gave us an out black lesbian, LaFonza Butler, as the U.S. Senator from California. But what happened?
She has, I mean, I think we're all a little bit sad about this, but she has decided that she will not be returning next year. Despite this.
After the election, yeah.
After the election, but despite her, you know, she's never really held public office, and she was relatively unknown to Californian voters prior to this moment. So she has said. This is her, what she actually said in a statement. Knowing you can win a campaign doesn't always mean you should run a campaign. I know this will be a surprise to many, because traditionally we don't see those who have power let it go. It may not be the decision people expected, but it's the right one for me. Andy, what do you make of this?
Well, what I make of it is that the open primary is in March. And in fact, even sooner she had to decide, because the Democratic Party will make a designee, just a, you know, the party apparatus, and that, and they're going to choose between Adam Schiff, Katie Porter, and Barbara Lee. So also she hadn't raised any money.
No. She doesn't have enough time, and it's a crowded field, is what people are saying already. So,
yeah. And on the Republican side, you've got this guy named Steve Garvey, who was a very famous baseball player with the San Diego Padres and the LA Dodgers. He's kind of a wild card. He's 74 years old, but he's very famous in the state of California. That could be a problem. So what happens in March is everybody votes, Democrat and Republican at the same time. All the candidates are in a primary. The two top vote getters will be the candidates will have a runoff in November. And that's how it works in California.
So she basically preemptively thinks she doesn't have a chance, and then therefore she's not going to. I mean, in a way, I understand her point of view, because she won't have had enough time to prove what she can do. I hope she comes back. I hope we see more of her.
Okay. Well, let's go to Montana.
Yes. Federal judge in Montana is hanging on. On October the 13th, Judge Brian Morris ruled to continue blocking the enforcement of House Bill 359, which is that law that would make Montana the first state to explicitly ban drag kings and queens from reading to children in schools and libraries that receive public funding. How much longer can this go on, Andy? How can he hold the fort?
Well, I mean, you know, Florida has asked the Supreme Court to block the rulings that limit their anti-drag law. But Brian Morris, who was an Obama appointee, but he once clerked for the far-right Republican Chief Justice, William Rehnquist. And he was quite eloquent in his decision. He said this not only targets protected speech and expression. He said the text and legislative history evince anti-LGBTQ animus. There's no evidence before the court that indicates that minors face any harm from drag-related events. The law created a risk of disproportionate enforcement against trans, two-spirit, and gender nonconforming people. Whew! I mean, that you don't usually hear this kind of language in a federal court decision, but it's certainly right on. And then in New Jersey...
Yeah, this was a little bit of a strange phenomenon. I didn't know it worked like this town by town, but there were five New Jersey towns who were discriminatory against LGBTQ couples applying licenses.
I think the issue was they never changed their websites.
They never changed the language, and therefore it was very off-putting. So when you went to these websites, the boilerplate language was heteronormative. So, you know, it was considered to be public-facing discrimination through their communications department. So the State Division of Civil Rights has notified those They notified the towns last year that these websites actually violated the New Jersey law against discrimination. This is coming from Attorney General Matthew Platkin. And that these the language on the websites had to be changed. Otherwise, the marriage license seemed to be exclusive to persons of the opposite sex. So all four did it. There was a holdout. I think it was the town of Hanover, initially unwilling to correct themselves. But they're all going to step into line. So there you go.
Well, yeah, they threatened them with fines and lawsuits and things. So they pulled in, yes. So they settled. In Arkansas, the ultra-right governor there, Sarah Huckabee Sanders, what a peach, is embroiled in a scandal over the expenditure of almost $20,000 for a podium bought from one of her closest advisors. And this even outraged some Republicans in the state. So to distract from all that, she held a bill signing for an executive order, or not a bill, an executive order, banning gender-neutral terms from state documents such as birth giver and laboring person, calling it an attempt to erase girls and women. Of course, this is a non-issue in Arkansas, but she did need the distraction. Arkansas, yes. Arkansas just kicked 400,000 people off of Medicaid. How about that?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, it's really something. If you watch her announce the executive order on YouTube, it's she's enough of this craziness, which is what she's calling political correctness. On the left, women have taken a backseat to political correctness. They're using nonsense words to erase women and girls, and more importantly, to erase our voices and our experiences. This was my favorite part. Quote, what started as a fad among a few grad students has seeped down into corporations, the healthcare industry, and increasingly state government. It's demeaning to women and needs to stop. She says it's not a cultural revolution. She said this is just a ploy by the left to make the word woman a dirty word.
Well, I mean, she presides over the state with the fifth highest poverty rate in the country, and it ranks 50th in quality of health.
There you go.
And, you know, I'm an Arkansas traveler, by the way, made so by Governor Clinton back in 1990 when I spoke at a gay youth conference down there, which means I'm supposed to represent the state and its qualities. And I have, my sister lives there, some of my nieces and nephews live down there. There are some wonderful people, especially in Little Rock. I wouldn't forsake the state, but actually one of my nieces did. She left the state and the country because of people like Sarah Huckabee Sanders.
I mean, but her language is so opaque, but telling. I mean, when she refers to the healthcare industry as an industry, not as a system, I mean, that pretty much tells you what her politics are. And when she says that wokeness comes from, you know, basically a grad school plot, she's telling you that she's anti-education. I mean, it's pretty obvious.
Yeah. All right. Let's. In better news, in Orlando, 200,000 people showed up for Orlando Pride.
Yes. Giving the finger to Ron DeSantis, I think. And the grand marshal was 11-year-old transgender girl, Dempsey Jara. Jara, I think is how she pronounces her name. But she was leading.
Here she is with her parents.
Yes, and look at her terrific outfit. She led the parade wearing heart shaped pink sunglasses with a puppy on her lap. She basically said in a statement to local media, "Being transgender is not about a choice. It's about being true to myself. It's about embracing who I am, even when the world tries to tell me otherwise. It's about standing tall in my identity, even when it's really hard." So that was very heartening, Andy, to see 200,000 come out.
Yes.
Yep.
That's what coming out is what it's all about, so that they can't erase us no matter what kind of laws they pass.
Yeah.
There's more on the scandals at Liberty University. We covered this a lot in the past. It may be fined $37.5 million by the U.S. Department of Education for violating a law that requires federally funded colleges to report campus crime. And all Liberty did was cover up campus crime.
Gas leaks, bomb threats, sexual harassment, sexual violence. I mean, they've just swept it under the rug.
Yes. And and repeated acts of sexual violence, including by senior administrators and a college athlete. Now, of course, they fired President Jerry Falwell Jr. He's suing the school. The school is suing him. And now he's charging that other high-ranking Liberty officials and board members committed sexual and financial misconduct, and they weren't fired. So it's a complete mess down there, but I hope they are taken to task.
Liberty, goodness me. It's another one of those loaded right-wing, like, family and family and liberty. Yeah, it just sounds like a mess. Anyway, what about this ex-Florida GOP lawmaker who sponsored the so-called our favorite bill, the Don't Say Gay bill? He's been sentenced to prison. Okay, just 4 months, but it's still something, isn't it? A federal judge on Thursday has sentenced him to do time for basically taking relief funds for COVID-affected businesses to the tune of about $150,000. And these businesses, I believe, were actually either not operational or they were just, you know, paper sort of shelf companies. Anyway, he is the guy, Joe Harding, Republican of Williston, who was instrumental in getting the bill that we call Don't Say Gay.
He was the author of it.
The author of it, as I'd hate to use that word, but he was. He was the brain behind that bill.
He was only elected in 2020 and he did an awful lot of damage.
In such a short time. I mean, it's incredible. But now here's the charges. He pled guilty in March to one count each of wire fraud, money laundering, and making false statements as part of a scheme to fraudulently obtain the $150,000 of federal COVID-19 relief loans.
Well, and speaking of criminals, I see on the news that Trump just got fined another $10,000 for violating his gag order again.
Oh, golly. Golly.
This guy Harding, though, was quite a piece of work. But they go easy on these guys. He doesn't even have to report to prison till after the holidays. And, and he gets 2 years of supervised release after that.
Yeah.
The war on LGBTQ people in what I call the new Confederacy is taking its toll on support for LGBTQ people at state universities and colleges. University of Houston, which is a state school, disbanded its LGBTQ resource center, closed it down after the wicked Governor Abbott signed a law banning offices dedicated to diversity, equity, and inclusion at public colleges and university. It's happening in Florida too. A protest is planned at the University of Houston, over the closure. A nearby Rice University, which is a private school, their LGBTQ center offered honorary membership to LGBTQ students across Texas. And so that's how they're fighting back. All right, Marin.
Yes.
Sad news from San Diego.
Oh, yeah, one of the best lesbian bars. As many of you would know, there's hardly any lesbian bars left in the country. I think we're down to about 21, which I think is a record low. But anyway, police in San Diego, California, have now arrested 38-year-old Ryan Habrell for starting a fire, allegedly, on the patio of Gossip Grill, which is one of the nation's beloved lesbian bars. It has a terrific atmosphere. And the fire occurred at past midnight. In about 20 minutes, the fire brigade had come and thankfully put it out. No one was injured. Not a hell of a lot of damage was done. I think an awning and a flag.
$10,000 worth of damage.
But enough. And also, I mean, look, the message is loud and clear. So video cameras thankfully captured Habrell setting the fire. And the day after this arson occurred, the bar's owner, Mo Gerton, spotted him wandering around the area. He's known to locals as somebody who seems to have mental illness problems. And she contacted police, and that led to his immediate arrest. So, $10,000 damage done. I don't know what's going to happen to him. I don't know what kind of sentences are going to be late. But
you have to ask yourself, where do mentally ill people get the message that LGBTQ establishments should be set fire to?
Yeah.
It's lucky. We're lucky that there were two workers inside who not only survived, the fire didn't get inside, but got the fire department there. And the bar remains open.
Yeah. So if you're in the neighborhood, go and support them.
Absolutely. In Nebraska, we told you how Northwest High School shut down the school newspaper because it covered LGBTQ issues last spring. A trans student, Marcus Pennell, filed a federal lawsuit with the help of the ACLU for, challenging all this. But Judge John Girard, who is an Obama appointee, dismissed the case, saying Pennell didn't have the school's, he wasn't harmed. Mm. He graduated, and could not show that the school's retaliation versus the paper harmed him. He did warn the school that such censorship may run afoul of the First Amendment. The district agreed to bring the paper back, but only digitally online, not in print.
Yeah, it seems like a real coincidence to me that they shuttered the paper after a spate of articles.
I think they did it because of the gay stuff. They didn't like it.
Yep. Yeah, but he needed to, the plaintiff needed to show a specific injury or loss of standing related to the school's actions.
And then in California, a San Bernardino County judge issued a preliminary injunction preventing part of the reactionary Chino Valley School District's anti-trans policy from going into effect. It would have required teachers to report trans and non-binary students to their parents without the students' consent. And the suit was brought by the state attorney general, Bob Bonta, but the judge allowed another part to go into effect, notifying parents of a student asked for information on their records to be changed.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Should we talk about some of the trans people and trans and non-binary people we lost?
Yeah, I mean, it continues. Every week it seems that there is another handful of people who are found dead or tragically killed, and often, the dreaded copy that you see at the end of the article is, suspect at large or no suspects or nobody found. But anyway, according to the fabulous Sue Kerr of Pittsburgh Lesbian, we have three more, I think, trans non-binary people have been killed in the last week. Dominic Dupree, also known as Dominic Palace, was shot.
No, that's not Dominic. The first, that's Skylar Harrison.
Oh, Skylar Harrison. So Skylar Harrison, a 30-year-old black trans woman found dead in Marvin Gaye Park in Washington, D.C. on October the 2nd. I don't know the circumstances of that. Andy, do you have any more?
She was found stripped of her clothing her belongings, and the police were calling it a drug overdose, but the condition of her body suggested a violent death and may have been dumped in the park. The candlelight vigil was set for her, happened for her on October the 9th.
And also in D.C., we have Anee Robinson. Yeah. Now, she was assaulted and left for dead in the street in D.C., where a vehicle struck her, and she later died at a local hospital. I mean, this is just horrific.
Yes. The driver was not involved in the assault. A $25,000 reward has been issued for info on the perpetrator that leads to his or her arrest and conviction. And they grew up in D.C., worked as a character escort at Six Flags America before becoming self-employed. She was connected to Casa Ruby LGBTQ Community Center in D.C.
We have Dominic Dupree, known as Dominic Palace, shot to death on Friday, October the 13th in Chicago. Dominic was 25.
Yes, he was found inside a vehicle in an alley, struck multiple times. He was born in Indianapolis and relocated to Gary, Indiana. He established a business there, Private Protection Division, LLC, as well as Hondo the Fourth lawn care and snow removal. So he's a, it's not like he was working the streets or anything, but he was We don't know the motivation, and we don't have any news about arrests.
I mean, I think the worry for our community is once the person is found to be transgender, I think our fear is always that the investigation will suffer somehow. It will be compromised, just as it was back in the gay days. You know, if the victim was found to be gay, you know, the police took far less care with it. So that's our main concern, and that's often the focus of the work Sue does at Pittsburgh Lesbian. She often is going back to the families, putting the puzzle together, trying to work out what happened to these people.
And just as it's always been for people of color, and you'll notice that all three of these victims were people of color. In Ohio, the neo-Nazi who in March firebombed an LGBTQ church for hosting a drag event pled guilty to arson and obstruction of persons in the free exercise of religious beliefs. This guy's name was Eamon Penny, 20 years old, faces 10 to 15 years. Perry said he would have felt better if the church had burned to the ground.
Oh, wow. And his name is, I presume you pronounce it Amen, but it's not spelt like Amen. It's A-I-M-E-N-N. So that's a little other layer of irony right there.
Yeah. And speaking of Florida, the owner of the Pulse nightclub.
Oh, yeah.
Site of the 2016 massacre of 49 people at the LGBT club has finally agreed to sell to the city of Orlando. And I believe we have a video. There's the Pulse.
Yeah.
I visited that site. It's quite moving. She was holding on to it. It was holding up Memorial. So we have a video report on that.
Tonight, we are getting new reaction to the city of Orlando's decision to buy the Pulse nightclub site. News 6's Brian Didlake spoke with Orlando Mayor Buddy Dyer and is following the latest developments.
Mayor Buddy Dyer says somewhere on this property is where we could see a memorial for Pulse survivors. The city says right now, it's still too early to tell their vision for this site.
After 7 years of waiting for a permanent way to honor the 49 people who died in the Pulse nightclub tragedy, the city of Orlando is stepping in to take control of the property.
We've had a lot of family members and others who have made it very clear that the most appropriate place to honor the victims is on that site.
The city has brokered a deal to purchase this Pulse nightclub from its owners, Barbara and Rosaria Poma, for $2 million.
Mayor, who initiated the sale of Pulse? Was it the Pomas, or was it who started that sale process?
We started thinking about it. I don't remember when the mediation between One Pulse and the Pomas was. It's been months ago. So internally, we've been discussing it at least that long.
This all comes after a long history of back and forth building a memorial site honoring both survivors and victims. In September of 2019, the One Pulse Foundation purchased the land for it. But earlier this year, One Pulse terminated its lease with the nightclub owners, leaving those memorial plans in limbo.
We're going to get criticized through this process, but what I'd like for people to understand is that we have the right motives in mind. We're not trying to build our resume.
District 4 City Commissioner Patty Sheehan says taking the Pulse site out of the hands of the One Pulse Foundation was the best path forward. Yesterday, the One Pulse Foundation in a statement said, "We are thankful to the City of Orlando for ensuring that the National Pulse Memorial will be located at the Pulse nightclub site, which was always the hope of the families of the 49 victims and the Pulse impacted community."
I understand the sense of urgency, but we just got involved with this process in terms of dealing with this situation, and we want to do it right. And to do it right, it's going to take some time, but it certainly isn't going to take 7 years. I can assure you of that.
A reminder, the purchase of the Pulse nightclub has not been finalized. City Council is set to vote on this purchase Monday before sealing the deal next Friday. We're here in Orlando. Brian Ditlake getting results, News 6.
They had such elaborate plans for a memorial there at the Pulse. Not at the Pulse, but it would have been elsewhere because she wouldn't sell this one. But, you know, when I this is a crime scene.
Oh, yeah.
And it, just like the World Trade Center, and in the same spirit, I thought the best thing to do with a situation like that is grass the thing over.
You think?
Make it a place of quiet contemplation, not some big elaborate thing the best way to honor the Pulse victims is get rid of the Don't Say Gay law. How about pouring resources into that?
Yeah, I mean, exactly. I was feeling very much that it would be lovely if it could also have a component as a resource center where Florida youth could drop in, or people, you know, battling substance abuse could drop in and actually get some kind of support and information.
Well, maybe they will. I mean, if they watch the show and they listen to you, that's a great idea. That would be something positive to come out of it. Turn it into a gay youth center.
Yeah, I mean, I was thinking a lot about our community and having to often go to bars and nightclubs to feel this kind of sense of community, and what could replace that that's actually more useful moving forward while honoring the victims, because I don't think we should forget them.
Right. Okay, now we're going to talk about some transitions. Well, wait a minute, another thing. We don't cover George Santos much anymore, but
good.
The news this week, right?
Oh, I mean, that last thing I read was Grace Ashton's fabulous article in the New York Times. It was just more of the same. And I got to thinking, can we even be bothered anymore? It's just ridiculous.
Well, he called the reporter who wrote the original story. Yes. He had never spoken to her.
Who's a lesbian, by the way.
Right. She talked about her wife in the story. But this week he also went after out gay Congressman Richie Torres from the Bronx, calling him girly and blaming him for the death threats that he and his staff received. There had been some death threats against him. One guy in Florida is going on trial for leaving a voice message that he bashed Santos's head in with a bat. But if you're talking about death threats, it's the modus operandi of the Republican Party. I mean, what Jim Jordan unleashed during the speaker's race was getting Fox News and everything to get everybody all excited and call up their representatives who were holding out on Jim Jordan. And they got multiple death threats. Mm-hmm. Thank God. You know, I mean, the guy we got is terrible. This guy, Mike Johnson, as I said, fascism with a smiling face. But Jim Jordan, if anything, could have been worse. Mm. Or maybe not. We'll see. All right. Okay. So I want to talk about some transitions, some people who've changed.
Right. Some reversals. Well, Scholastic. So I've got a couple here. I think Scholastic, the Scholastic Book Fair has reversed decision to separate diverse, to silo diverse titles. Any stories that any books that center queer people or queer people of color. So after first apologizing for the controversial decision to have a kind of book apartheid at the fair, a statement's been released by Scholastic's president, Ellie Berger, saying that the move was, of course, a mistake. And I'm quoting here, even if the decision was made with good intention, we understand now that it was a mistake to segregate diverse books in an elective case, she wrote. Our commitment to BIPOC and LGBTQ IA plus authors remains foundational for our company. Berger's statement said that this elective case of books will be discontinued as of January, and that for all remaining book fairs this fall, Scholastic is going to work on a bit of a pivot. Stay tuned for more to see what they come up with.
Right. And as I always say, remember, kids, when they ban books, it's all on the internet.
Yeah.
Now, Diana Nyad, the out swimmer, who's now the subject of a major motion picture starring Annette Bening for her swim from Cuba to Florida without a shark cage, she came out against trans inclusion in elite women's sports 2 years ago. And now she has reversed her stance and regrets the harm her earlier essay may have caused. She says she understands now that the science is far more complex than I thought. And there are clearly more educated experts than I who are creating policy to ensure that elite sports are both fair and inclusive of all women. She also expressed concern for the climate of the transgender community that has turned dire and dangerous. Thank you. I now see how all women are negatively affected by the way transgender women are targeted by discrimination and abuse in sports and elsewhere. You know, I wonder if Annette Bening, who has a trans son, had some influence on her in this respect.
You know, very possibly. You know, the film is now, of course, screening in select theaters and will be available to stream on Netflix starting November the 3rd. And I would be very surprised if Bening and Naya didn't spend some time together for research and crafting the role. Andy, I think that's a really good theory. If you want to read Diana's full statement, head over to the Out 100 issue of Out.com.
Okay. And finally, you know, we told you that the National Hockey League banned rainbow tape on hockey sticks and things like that. They said, it's too divisive. Just, you know, keep all the social issues out. And there was a huge pushback. And a player named Travis Dermott of the Arizona Coyotes defied the ban, put the tape on his stick and said, do what you will to me. So now the NHL has responded, and they say players will now have the opportunity to voluntarily represent social causes with their stick tape. Pride tape started about 7 years ago, and Dermott said he got into it because it reflected what he learned about the toxic effects of anti-LGBTQ hate on people that he loves.
Oh, it's so interesting. I mean, when you think about athletes, they pick brands and logos for everything, for their rackets, their uniforms, whatever. And most of it to make money, but I don't want to be, you know, indoctrinated about certain brands and certain companies that have certain agendas when I'm watching an athlete play. So why not have a rainbow ribbon?
Maren, I want you to take the lead. We lost a friend and a colleague, yes, and a movement comrade this week, a veteran lesbian activist, Amber Hollibaugh, who has died at 77.
Yes. You know, Amber was so many things. I mean, what a life. She's a very interesting character of multiple identities. She did identify, I believe, as a lesbian writer, but she also claimed quote-unquote gypsy or Romani heritage on her father's side. I don't know how that's been proved, but she also was very passionately working-class activist and interested in trade and labor unions. She was a filmmaker. She was, of course, an activist with SAGE. She also wrote books that were very highly regarded. And if you want to have a look at her whole lesbian history, hop onto curvemag.com and go open the archive, put her name in as a search term, and you will see countless articles about her and all of the work she's done and the many different things. But one of her key books was the memoir My Dangerous Desires, A Queer Girl Dreaming Her Way Home, and it was at the time considered a pivotal piece of literature on femme identity, much like the work of Joan Nessel, who also looked at the identity of the femme and how it existed in the wider world and in our community.
Now there she is with Esther Newton.
Oh yeah, look at that.
They were longtime partners, and she's prominently featured in the film Esther Newton Made Me Gay. Esther was a lesbian anthropologist who pioneered queer studies, so they were quite a pair. But before we go further, maybe we should show the videotape.
Yeah, let's do it.
In a liberation framework, you have a very different way you draw the lines around how you understand what you're doing, which is to change the world. If we shift and build a movement of the places that are considered the most vulnerable, but which we know are the most commonplace, of poor and working class queer communities, if more and more of those people are involved in the kind of activism that we do, the social justice agenda that we have, we'll shift that agenda fundamentally. The priorities will then come from those communities. They won't be a tag on. They won't be a comma at the end of anybody's sentence. They'll be the centerpiece of how it is we organize the work. So liberation, I think, which is what started the LGBT movement's understanding of what its work was, has to reemerge as the way we now say, this is how we see change. We're pragmatic. We know that pragmatic small things matter, but the big things we're never giving up. because those big things are really where we're headed, and that we don't compromise.
I think that's pretty clear. And she was one of the first activists to say, look, we have to talk about sex work. We have to talk about surviving incest. I mean, these weren't centered ideas in the early days of the gay liberation movement. It's a big loss. And you see, we've got another lesbian that we lost.
Although, I mean, I think we should also say,
yep,
Amber served a lot of LGBTQ organizations.
Oh, yeah. Sage.
She worked as the chief officer of elder and LGBT women's services at the Howard Brown Health Center in Chicago. She was director of education and advocacy at Sage USA, based in New York. Back in 1970, she was a leader of the Canadian Movement for Abortion Rights. And with Alan Berube in 1978, she co-founded the San Francisco Lesbian and Gay History Project. So she had a tremendous record of service in the community.
And way ahead of her time in many regards. I mean, she just talked about social justice there, which is a term a lot of people only just started using a couple of years ago.
Right. And then there is someone who, lesbian rights activist and memoirs, Eva Kolisch, who died in Manhattan at the age of 98. She escaped Nazi-occupied Austria as a teenager and became an American professor and one of the founders of the Women's Studies program at Sarah Lawrence College. She was an activist from her early years. She joined the Trotskyist Workers' Party back in the mid-1940s and became disillusioned with them, arrested in protests against the Vietnam War. And while she didn't at first feel comfortable talking about her private life, she felt obligated as an advocate for lesbian and gay rights to do so. She said, straight people don't understand that it's not a choice we make because we're exhibitionists. It's about our own survival and self-respect that we have to do it. And she was the author of memoirs. She suffered from brutal anti-Semitism as a child in Vienna. And one of her first protests at the age of 13 was sitting on a park bench that was restricted to non-Jews in Vienna.
Yeah, she was like 11 years old, wasn't she? And she said she took over the bench with her friend, and she said that's activism. That is an example of activism.
It is. She was briefly married to a couple of guys and had a son, Yuri, but her longtime partner was Naomi Raplansky, who died in January at the age of 104. She said, I'm a feminist and a Marxist, but I am also very worried about the whole world and humanity and where humanity is.
Absolutely.
We're going to link to an interview with Eva and Naomi from 2016 in our email. You can go to gayusatv.org for that. And then I also want to note the death of Jack Anderson, 88 years old, the longtime dance critic of the New York Times, survived by his partner of 58 years.
Wow.
Boris in Greenwich Village. Together, they co-founded Dance Chronicle in 1977, a scholarly journal on dance that is still publishing. It's older than Gay USA. All right, international news.
Yes. Shall we start? Where are we starting with the
Terrible news that just now out of Nigeria. Security personnel arrested more than 70 people at a gay wedding, and they face sentences of 14 years. And it's in the north.
Another one.
It's in the north.
In addition to the other arrests.
Another one. It's another one. This is in the north, so they could be subject to Sharia law, which carries the death penalty for homosexuality. All right.
Terrible.
In the United Kingdom, it was good to read that, you know, Prime Minister Rishi Sunak had turned to transphobia to try to save his failing Conservative Party. He lost two by-elections for Parliament last week. There was a big turnaround in these districts. So he is being rejected.
Yep. Two Conservative seats, Tamworth and Mid-Bedfordshire, overturned by Sir Keir Starmer.
And one of the top Tories, one of his lieutenants, is Penny Mordaunt, who's the leader of the House of Commons. She played a very visible role proclaiming Charles as king. She has a twin brother, James. We had a picture of the two of them, who last week called out and said, this is the most anti-LGBTQ government in my lifetime. Claims he maintains a good relationship with his sister. but he doesn't hold back and holds the Tory party responsible for their backsliding on LGBTQ rights. Penny herself flipped on trans issues for political expediency. Shame.
Yes, that was a very inflammatory tweet for those who don't remember it. I have a hysterectomy. If I have a hysterectomy or a mastectomy, I'm still a woman. I am legally a woman. Some people born male and who have been through the gender recognition process are also legally female. That does not mean they are biological women like me.
Now, stay tuned. We've told you that Prime Minister Sunak is, you know, the whole party was supposed to do ban conversion therapy 5 years ago. But it might be in the King, actually be in the King's speech in November. I'll believe it when I see it. In Ireland, two life sentences for 23-year-old Yousef Palani, who pled guilty to the murder of two gay men in Sligo, and an additional 20 years for seriously injuring a third gay man. He targeted gay men on dating apps in a 4-day spree of violence.
This was horrific. The details of this were horrific. The injured man who survived was stabbed in the eye. One of the other men was stabbed 25 times and the other one 43 times and was decapitated. I mean, this is horrific. This guy met them on dating apps and went home with them. So, yeah, please be careful out there.
Hong Kong, the court dismissed the government bid to deny same-sex married couples inheritance rights, saying the refusal was unacceptably harsh burden. All right. Hey, now, look, you know, I mean, things haven't changed completely in the Catholic Church, as you know, but the Pope did meet with leaders of the Catholic LGBTQ advocacy group New Ways Ministry, including my old friend, Sister Janine Gramick there, the group's founder in 77. Janine was banned in 1984 by then Cardinal Ratzinger, later Pope Benedict, from doing any pastoral work with LGBTQ people due to what he called errors and ambiguities in their work. So he'd already exchanged letters with them and they seemed to have a warm relationship. You know, you saw the other leaders like Francis DiBernardo of New Ways in the meeting. So they feel greatly encouraged by this. Gramick thanked the Pope for his openness to blessing same-sex unions, although openness, he hasn't done it yet. She's long admired him for his love of the poor and those shunned by society. Now, New Ways is not arguing for anything radical. They just want to be us to be treated a little more nicely by the church. You know, it's not like they're going to get rid of the teaching that we're disordered. Anyway, but I've known Janine since the early 1980s. She gave testimony for the Gay Rights Bill in 1986 when it passed, condemning Catholic bishops for their obsession with homogenital activity, coming from this very sweet nun. It was great.
And speaking of that, there seems to be a bit of homogenital activity in Poland. The Pope has accepted the resignation of a Polish bishop, whose turf has been rocked by reports of a gay orgy involving a male sex worker in a priest's apartment, as well as previous incidents involving his clergy. This was a doozy, Andy. I couldn't believe it. The Vatican didn't give a reason why. I think it's Gregor's Kazak was resigning as head of the Diocese of Sosnowicz in southwest Poland at 59. He's still got a few years before he's meant to retire at 75. But one of his priests was placed under criminal investigation for having allegedly organized an orgy at his apartment involving a lot of erectile dysfunction pills, and one member of the party collapsed after overdosing on the pills, and the priest was suspected of failing to provide assistance to a person whose life.
Right. He was embarrassed by this, so he didn't let the EMS and everybody in, and that's deadly. That's the deadly consequences of the closet.
I think so, yeah.
By the way, Anne last week wanted me to acknowledge her mistake. Donald Tusk, who was going to be the likely new prime minister of Poland, and he's much more progressive than the current government. He is not an out gay man. Now, there was another opposition leader we've been talking about in Greece who was. All right.
Okay.
AIDS news. the Republican House is, you know, open for business again, and they've got a $760 million cut in HIV prevention stuff on the desk right now. So that's a problem. And I also want to acknowledge, not that. I also want to acknowledge the death of Allen Eisenberg, who was the leader of Actors Equity, not a gay man, but when AIDS hit in 1981, he died at the age of 88, he led Equity for 25 years and formed Equity Fights AIDS, which combined with Broadway Cares, Equity Fights AIDS, and really provided a lot of leadership there. Mm. All right. We have about 2.5 minutes left.
Let's do entertainment. How about something fun?
Well, congrats to Christian Cooper.
Oh, Chris, well done.
Our host here, whose memoir, Better Living Through Birding, Notes from a Black Man in the Natural World, was long listed by the American Library Association for the Andrew Carnegie Medal for Excellence in Nonfiction. The short list is coming out November 14th.
I thoroughly enjoyed that book. Please do read it. It's not like the usual memoir, and it's a lot of fun.
Yes.
And what about our favorite actor, Zachary Quinto? He's going to helm a new TV series, apparently based on the life of Oliver Sacks. This is from NBC. He's going to play a character called Dr. Wolf, a revolutionary, larger-than-life neurologist, as he and his team of interns explore the last great frontier, the human mind, while also grappling with their own relationships and mental health. But, Andy, will there be any LGBT, you know, themes?
Well, it's based on Oliver Sacks, who came out late in life, and it's produced by the uber gay producer, Greg Berlanti. So I hope so.
You hope so. And this has been really generating a lot of buzz, this epic gay love story titled Fellow Travelers that is coming to us from Showtime, starring Matt Bomer and Jonathan Bailey, both of whom are out gay actors. I'm really excited about this, Andy, especially since it's set against the backdrop of one of the more conservative and punishing periods of American history.
It goes from the 50s to the 80s, and it bows on Paramount Plus October 27th and Showtime on October 29th. It's getting very nice notices and said to be very absorbing and sexy. And finally, the new documentary about the gay poet and activist Allen Ginsberg, The Life and Times of Allen Ginsberg, is now available streaming platforms like Amazon Prime and others and on DVD. I heard him read many times, only interviewed him once at a march in Washington. Quite the icon, and so good to be with you. Maren, we got through it.
We got through it. Will you take care of yourself, you know?
I will.
Straight to bed.
And you all take care of yourselves, too. Thanks for being with us.